Hey guys, welcome to What the Foof,
Everybody, how's
the
it
girl,
going?
the one person who's watching this show. But you
Oh,
know
it's a
what?
lot
I
of
know who's
people.
going to watch the show, definitely. My
Who?
kids would definitely watch this show when I'm dead.
And how long do you estimate
My grandkids
that
hopefully will watch the show when I'm dead. And maybe my ancestors, you know, after that. So this is the beginning of like a new type of history, I believe.
I think, yeah, it's like we're recording everything and we're just telling it as it is. Like, people just have to believe us that this is the way everything happened, but like, why would we lie to you guys?
Yeah, so this is February 2nd. Oh my God, it's synchronicity. 2/2/2/23, right?
Yep.
Anyway, it's February 2nd, 2023. It's the year of the rabbit or cat in Vietnamese. It's cat, and
Cat.
rabbits is Chinese.
I don't know what animals they have in Vietnam, like for the horoscope. What is it?
Yeah, it's cat in Vietnamese. So basically, I'm actually half Vietnamese and half Chinese. So I was born in Vietnam. My dad was born in Vietnam. My mom is actually 100% Vietnamese, was born in Vietnam too. But my dad was actually an immigrant to Vietnam from China, from Diaozhou, right? Diaozhou is a
Okay.
type of
Yeah.
district, right? It's an area, right? And then his family spoke Chinese at home, but he didn't speak Chinese. And he learned Vietnamese and he grew up in Vietnam, but his blood is actually Chinese. And that's why we basically, you know, have some Chinese blood in us, but we're actually Vietnamese because we, you know, my dad kind of grew up there and then married my mom. And so he doesn't really speak Chinese at all. So I learned Vietnamese and I'm fluent in Vietnamese, I'm pretty good at Vietnamese. And so my kids, I'm hoping to teach them Vietnamese, but they're not learning as much as I want them to. But I'm going to try to maybe throw them into the water and just move to Vietnam for the summer for one summer or so, maybe get
Okay,
them into it.
see how it goes.
Right.
I had some friends that remember they're like second or third generation Italian in Montreal, and they live in Saint Leonard and everything, and then they thought they were like really Italian. They're like, my cousins came over from Italy actually to visit, and turns out I can't speak Italian.
Yeah, I
When
mean, I think that's a gift that I'd like to give them is the gift of the multicultural culture.
Yep.
So, I actually this episode I'd like to talk about something.
Yeah, for
I'd like to
sure.
talk about what it means to kind of come to this country,
Okay.
and the American dream, and maybe more about my personal story, and how I kind of grew up, and you know, love to tell you know how I got here. So basically, you know, I was born in Vietnam in 1976. It was the end of the Vietnam War. Both my parents were actually teachers. My mom was a teacher and my dad was a principal at the same school. So they actually met, you know, while they were teaching and they married and then they had my brother in 1974. And then, you know, the war was going on, obviously, and my dad had to go fight in the army. So he was actually in the Vietnamese, South Vietnamese army fighting the communists, basically, right? Fighting the
Are all
North
the men
Vietnam.
drafted?
Well, yeah, I think he was drafted. Yeah, I think, or maybe he just volunteered. But either way, he never talked about it. But I know
Okay.
he was deployed and he was there, and he has like, you know, wounds, I think. But it was a
Yeah.
time he never talked about. So basically, he went, and you know, during that time, my mom, you know, with the schools and stuff, it wasn't something that you can do anymore. So we started to get into the fertilizer business. So
Huh.
we'd buy fertilizer from the city, and then sell it to the countryside.
Okay.
Right. So I'm not
Yeah.
sure it was around that time, but around the war time. And so we started actually doing well in that, because my mom is actually very outgoing, and she's a wonderful woman, and everyone loves her. And she basically is Go Sao is like her nickname. So she's number six in the family. Okay,
Okay.
so the number two person is actually the oldest child. So number one are the parents, right? Number two is the oldest child, and you go three, four, five, six. So when you're
Okay.
number six, that means you're the fourth child of the family. You can tell, right? So for me, I'm three,
Okay.
right? So my little brother has called me An Ba, which is
Yeah.
older brother three, because you can have older brother two, An Hai, which is my older brother, right? So when I call my older brother, I have to say An Hai, which is two. So
Okay.
older brother two. So we all have numbers in the family. So that's actually a very definitely Vietnamese thing, right? So you're gonna be like Go Sao is like she's the fourth child and she's a woman, obviously. So Go is actually it means like auntie. And so if you actually have someone who's a female, you use a different name, a different word, right? And if you are a male, you have to say uncle,
Okay.
right? Or
Yeah.
chú, or bác, or Gao, or something like that, right? Depending how old they are. You also have to know age, okay? So you have to know not only know what sex they are, what number in the family, right? But also, you know, how old they are relative to you. Okay. Not how old they are, but how old they are relative to you. So let's say I'm an old person and someone else is an old person. I can call you an M, which means brother, little brother, bigger brother, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm in the retirement home. I can call you An, you can call me Am. And you have to call An the person who's older than you. And Am is the person who's younger than you. So Am is younger than you. An is older than you, right? But the thing about Am, right? Am could be anyone, female or male.
Okay.
Because it doesn't matter, because you can show disrespect to people who are lesser than you in terms of age. So it's built into the language. Certain rules, very weird, weird rules. But if I'm a younger person,
yeah.
Let's say I'm my age or something like 30s, 20s, 40s, whatever mm-hmm. it is, right? And I meet someone older than me, I might call them back, right? Back is a sign of respect. That means that's like not only are you older than me, but you're like a wise man. You're like someone I should listen to. Back,
what was
right?
It?
So someone back? Like an uncle, like a okay. great uncle, like someone who's like a wise, so an older person who's much older than you, right? But
okay.
you're someone you should listen to, right? So the whole culture in Vietnam mm-hmm. is all about family.
Okay.
But your family extends beyond your family and everyone in society is part of your family. So the word for you and me,
yeah,
you have to say back. You know, whether they're in your family or not.
But what about like, right? What about your names? Like, is your name involved at all? Let's say like Phuc An or something like that.
Okay. So the names are backwards. So in Vietnam, you say your last name first.
Okay.
Then your middle name and then your last name. So I would be Trương Vĩnh Phúc. Now, when I say the middle word, V-I-N-H,
mm-hmm.
I can say Trương Vĩnh Phúc
okay.
or Trương Vĩnh Phúc. Okay.
Like
sometimes you replace the V with a Y because I'm from the South. So I have a Southern accent. It's like talking with a Southern accent, you know, in America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have to say anything with a dual, you know, whatever the accent
yeah, yeah, yeah.
is. Just like, Alabama like, or whatever yeah, it is. Alabama, so that's the same thing. Man. The Yin is a Southern accent. I'm from the South. I'm actually from Thoc Noc, Sa Đéc area, which is south okay. of Saigon. So even farther south than Saigon. So I call Saigon, but everyone calls it Ho Chi Minh City now because that's what they changed it to. But I call Saigon. You know, it's saying like Stalingrad. Like I refuse to call it Stalingrad. I like to call it like whatever, Moscow, whatever it is, right?
Like Bombay.
Yeah, yeah, the original name, right? It just
yeah.
Anyway, that's what we call Saigon, right? So I was south of Saigon, and then we would take a moped or something, and we didn't have cars. No one had cars, right? Take a moped and you go to the market and you buy fertilizer from the city. That's what my mom did and brought it back. And so to the countryside. And that's how we raised money to actually escape the country the first time, right? So when we escaped in 1976, you know, after the war, you know, was over, basically the communists took over. And just okay. like with anything, you know, they start putting their people in power and then they start banning people who were part of the old administration. For example, that's like crazy. Teachers couldn't yeah, teach yeah. anymore, right? Or if you were in the South Vietnamese army, for sure, you were an enemy. So, you know, when you take over, you basically say, oh, those people can't teach. They, you know, they obviously fought against us. They're the bad guys. They shouldn't be part of society in the same
yeah,
way.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
so basically, my dad and actually many, many people tried to escape, you know, and some people went the land route through Cambodia, Laos. Some people went to the Philippines, the sea route to the Philippines, which is east. But basically what happens is you get these boats, they're like small ferry boats. And these ferry boats basically take you along the shoreline and hopefully make it to Thailand, for example, right?
Okay.
Or maybe you can go in a bigger boat, maybe go to the Philippines, but there's different escape routes. And you have to basically save up and put money in, and give money to this person who would organize the trip. And at night, you would have to basically stay quiet and basically go out along the area that's patrolled by the Coast Guard, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Coast Guard of Vietnam, right? And essentially make sure you don't get caught. Some people get caught. So we got caught the first time.
Yeah, and we went to jail. It's like the whole process of like the whole like Mexican wetbacks and everything, no? Like with the vigilantes and everybody like there with the coyoteros and whatnot, that they make you like walk through the desert and everybody has like their struggle. Yeah,
that's exactly what's happening, right?
Yeah.
And there's still people who are in tankers, right? Right. That they put in tankers and you hide in tankers and you put dock in America and you open the tanker. But sometimes there are dead people in the tanker because they didn't get enough air.
Yeah.
So the struggle continues, like whether it be from the Mexican border, right? Or whether from, you know, people from Afghanistan, right? They had to leave the country suddenly because they were taken over by the Taliban, and some of the people who collaborated had to stay. And so those people who collaborated had to stay, but then maybe they try to escape somehow, and hopefully they make it.
Yeah, I know. I was watching like a lot of like the red tape that they have like to get their like the people that were helping there that were locals. And at the end, they were supposed to like the military was supposed to like they promised them like safety and for them and their family if in exchange for cooperation. And there was so much red tape around like the whole situation of actually bringing them into like the States that sometimes they wouldn't make it. So they were like the Taliban would like find out that they were assisting the U.S. Army and everything, and then just get there before the papers were ready.
Yeah, I mean, like there's a lot of stuff that goes that you don't even realize. Like, so for example, when we escaped, there are pirates that actually raided our ship. So the first time we got caught, right? And then we lost my, I was in jail with my parents and my whole family for like a week. And then my dad was a month, I believe. And in jail, they were basically calling him a coward. How, you know, he shouldn't leave the country because he's, you know, abandoning our country. And he basically said, hey, you know, one of my kids one day will come back and do great things, but there's no opportunity here for them. And so I have to take care of my family and give them a better opportunity. And basically he was talking about the American dream, right? Yeah. The American dream is you live in a country that isn't stable, where you maybe used to have a ability to make a living and have a life, but then you don't. And many countries are like that. And many countries have people who want to come to America or Canada or somewhere like that, right? England. And these countries are beacons of hope.
Yes.
But America is the greatest of all of them. That's the number one prize. So if you're an immigrant, you want to get to America. Because everyone in America, this is my point of view, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone in America has one TV each. They have one car each. They have one microwave each. They have one cell phone each. They have maybe multiple cell phones each. They have a computer, they have McDonald's, they have $1 meals, they have malls, they have everything. And they have peace where you don't have to worry about getting killed or, you know, getting kidnapped or having,
you know, tons of perks.
Food on the table, because they have welfare too. And they have Social Security and they have all these things where you can actually benefit as an immigrant. So, you know, Vietnamese people, that's like, that's like the lottery ticket. It's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. If you can somehow get that golden ticket, everything will be all right.
Exactly. It's funny, like how and some people take it just for granted. Like you just assume that. What do you mean I don't have food? Or like, what do you mean like this is happening? And you're like, buddy, like you don't know how good you have it.
Yeah, and I worry that for my kids because you know they don't have that experience. But when I came to this country, right, we lived in a 3-deck in Dorchester. This is where I still live, right?
Okay.
But we lived on 13 Leroy Street. And this American woman, her name was Gladys Yetman. We actually became friends with her, but she was the landlord. But she was very nice. So we were spotted. So the second time we escaped, let me just finish the story about how we escaped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And then we led to Gladys. But basically, she's a great woman. She helped us. And so did many people along the way, right? So we went and, you know, tried a second time. So we had to sell fertilizer and all that stuff. And you can go to the first podcast to hear more details. So that's how you know this whole started. But basically, we got sponsored by – we made it to Thailand after we were raided by pirates and all that stuff. And we almost died. My brother almost died because he drank seawater. And, you know, dehydrated. And we were basically like a week. It took like a week. And
how old was
he? Finally got rescued. And I was 1976. This is 1980, right? 1980, right? Around. So basically,
how old was your brother when he drank the water?
He was 2.
Man,
he was born in 1978.
It's a fragile age. My older brother, 1974.
I was 76. 78 was my youngest brother. So two years apart. So 3 brothers, 3 young kids. And my crazy parents brought us into a boat. for a week, hoping to make it to America, to Thailand, actually. And then from Thailand, there would be a refugee camp where we stayed. And then you can apply to go to America. And lucky for us that my dad was in the army.
Okay.
Right? That he had, you know, a bunch of good green check marks. We were outstanding candidates to be sponsored to come to Boston by a church group that we actually got sponsored. And we left very, very quickly, you know, after a couple months, right?
Okay.
A couple weeks. A lot of people were stuck there for a long time. And some people were stuck in the Philippines for years, like tens of years. Like, and sometimes,
do you remember any of it? Like, do you have like longer vivid memories?
Well, I remember, you know, some stuff from Vietnam. I remember some of the, well, I remember something that my dad doesn't remember. Like, I remember that in preparation for the trip, he threw us in the river and he threw a tire and said, swim to that tire in case something happened so that we can get used to swimming towards a tire and holding on to it. I remember this very clearly because I was like, holy shit, this is going to be real, right? And I'm like, I'm actually going to, he pushes in there, he's like, jump in the river, go out, grab that tire. And he doesn't remember that part for some reason. But I do.
Well, you don't want to remember that. So he's either
a fake memory, but I think that's a real memory.
Mm-hmm. Well, he blocked
it out. I also remember one of the things I did was when I was, we played marbles. Okay, so when we were young, there was no TV, there's nothing like that. The only game you had was either you play with mud. So I would make clay sculptures out of mud, including my penis, my wee-wee.
Mm-hmm. And that was an episode on that too.
Make moldings of my penis. I say, oh, that looks like my wee-wee, and I would just make more of it. I don't know, but that was something I was famous for. I was also famous for chasing chickens, and I got scratched. I have a scar in somewhere, right, on my face from the mother chicken who didn't
chicken
like me
scratch.
Catching their chicks. I remember that, okay? Yeah, I have a scar from that. And then I also remember playing marbles and being pretty good at it.
Okay.
And so when you have marbles, it's like Squid Games. You ever see Squid Games?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like all those games that guy played. Those are the kind of games like where you like, because you don't have TV, you know, you had to play.
No, that's how we used to play before. I mean, like with the marbles, you used to play like cards, card games, and all of these things, like whatever you had around, basically.
Yeah, well, the marbles is intense because you can steal other people's marbles. So if you win, you get that.
You're betting it. You're betting.
So yeah, it was an addiction to gambling at a young age, right? But you know, Asian culture, we're actually taught to be gambaholics on New Year's. So New Year's just passed.
Okay.
And I explained to my kids in plain language what New Year's is about, right? So New Year's is about younger people going and kissing their parents' ass or their older people that in their lives. The rule is this. The person who is your victim must be married, okay? They have to be married. And if you're a single person and younger than them, all you have to do is wish them a happy new year and kiss their butt, like say a couple good things about them.
Mm-hmm.
And literally by karmic law, they have to give you what's called lisi. They have to give you the red envelope with lucky money in it.
Oh.
Because it's like Halloween.
Yeah, but with cash.
If you don't give a trick or treat, if they say trick or treat, you don't give anything, they're going to egg your house. But in this case, karmic justice for the next year will hang over your head and you will have an unlucky year.
That's
so
crazy.
So the kids have to go to the village side. And I remember when I was young, right, and in America, we were poor, right? But some Vietnamese people, they actually came with money, right? They came even before. So the other folk, actually, the partner of my company, he flew to America before the war ended. So he was probably one of the rich crew, right? There's a bunch of rich people, diplomats, high society, who saw the writing on the wall and can actually have the capacity to fly here. They took all the gold with them, all that stuff. There's a lot of rich people, you know, from that in California and all that. And one of my friends, he would go to California. And he would basically say Happy New Year's to his family, and he would get $10,000 a year from one person. Then another person, okay, he would get $5,000. Another person, he would get a couple thousand. And literally, I think he got like 20-something thousand to party in college.
Because
I was like, why do you drive like such a nice car? He drove like an Eclipse, you know, the cool Eclipse car back then. It had a hump on it. I don't know if you know that it's like a race car looking thing. It's freaking cool. And then he got all the girls. He had all the money. And I said, how do you get all this money? Do you have a job or something? He said, oh, yeah, I can tell. All he had to do is go kiss ass during New Year's. And that's the way for your parents to enforce that your kids visit you.
Okay. That's funny. Like, that's one way of doing it. Like, you just...
No, I mean, that's very practical, actually. So that's what my religion is. So my religion is, we have no religion in my village, right?
Mm-hmm.
We basically, not even Buddhists. Like, some people are Buddhists. You can, right? We're tolerant of that. But we don't really have a religion. We just do what's called ancestral worship, right? So ancestral worship means we have an altar, and the altar has pictures of our ancestors. And we basically, during New Year's, we thank them for what they gave us, and we remember them. I think the Mexican culture has this, like the Latino culture has this too, right? Yeah, Day of the Dead or something like that, right?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then you just have to give them lucky money through the form of burning fake paper.
Okay. But
the intent is you can burn paper, and that paper becomes money in the afterlife.
Huh. Okay.
So there's also bribery to the spirits.
Even
so, there's the whole society of bribery. So now you know why there's so much so much corruption. But it's not corruption. You think it's corruption, but that's just the way it's supposed to work.
That's crazy, though. I mean, like, even when you're dead, you don't escape it. Like, please, I need
some... If you have good ancestors, they'll burn a lot of paper for you during New Year's, and actually during your funeral, they can burn paper too to give you money.
So you could be like a wealthy spirit or dead person?
Yes. So if more people think about you and burn this, it's basically like a scorecard of, I guess, karma.
Okay.
And I guess you get more karma if people do this.
Yeah.
And maybe
true. Like because you touch more people's lives, that they're willing to go out of the way to help you out because how you were when you were alive?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a remembrance thing. It's like your life mattered, not just in this generation, but to all your ancestors, right? All the people, all the ancestors, all the people who you're going to have, your grandchildren, right?
Yeah.
Everyone is going to worship you if you do good deeds in this lifetime, right? So if you're a good uncle, you're a good grandfather, you take care of them, and I'm a good dad, hopefully my kids will put an altar with my name on it, right? And my picture. And then every New Year's, they'll do incense. Mm-hmm. So incense is you burn a stick, essentially, a fragrant stick, right? And that's basically sending, you know, your love to the spirit world. But that's all we want. We're pretty simple people. So all I want, right? So when I made $1 million last year, right? All I wanted to do, I think episode whatever, we talked about this, where I cashed out $1 million for my last company, yes. Clinical Research IO, right?
Yeah, we'll check it out.
You know, I was able to fulfill the American dream come true. I was able to, pay off all my debts, ensure my mom that, you know, she would be safe and that we'd be okay. And then I had a lot more equity coming my way, right? And I had more money, millions of dollars locked up in equity. And that someday I would cash out more of it, right?
Yep.
And then I took care of fixing up some houses, some renovation for my brother and some other stuff in terms of Vietnam. I helped some people there in terms of my people, my in-laws and all that stuff. And I took care of everything in terms of all the debts that I had in terms of paying all my friends who helped me borrow money during the times I needed it. When I was desperate, I asked them and they were really helpful. They did.
Yeah.
And in the end, I spent most of $1 million, but I still had some left. And then I let that last amount, I let the company borrow it. The Fook Labs borrow it to stay alive. So that $1 million kind of went a long way, but it wasn't enough, I don't think. Right.
Well, not yet. We're still looking for funding, though. I mean, like, it's getting there.
Yeah. So basically, I thought about it some more. And I actually, the other day, wanted to sell some more shares.
Okay.
So I asked one of my friends, the investor who actually said no, the same guy who helped me earlier, I said, would you like to buy some of my shares? And he said, after some talking, sure, I'll do it. So then we had to get approval from my old company, from the board of directors.
Yeah.
And they said, that sounds great, but we're going to ask everyone if they want to buy and sell at the same price.
Okay.
And then I met with him yesterday, the board of directors, right? And he said to me, look, before you wanted to do this, some other people on the cap table, basically the people who had shares, some of them wanted to sell too. So this is actually a good opportunity. Huh. And a good price, because we have that price, $8 a share from last year or something like that, right? Where it was, right?
Okay.
And we can use the same price for this transaction, which is the price I set for my friend.
Okay.
So because I set the price for my friend, the investors actually have a really good discount because they got the price from last year.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, you get some like.
And
some
company perks has doubled in revenue from last year. So the price from last year is at least half off, maybe more.
Man. So would it be?
But that's okay with me because I own enough where, you know, I said to him, I'm going to sell $1 million. Is that cool? And he said, sure. So I'm in the process of selling $1 million of my shares. So now I can pay off my mortgage. And then I can also, my wife, the reason I wanted to borrow the money from my friend, we only started with wanting to get like 150K, was because she applied for a franchise called Kumon.
Okay.
So Kumon is a franchise where you can tutor kids. It's like an after school program, and there's a franchise that you can buy, like Dunkin' Donuts, right? Or McDonald's or those franchises.
Yeah.
And she was basically the Kumon teacher for our kids, really liked us and got along with us and offered to help get the franchise for us. And she just got approved.
Awesome. Like you get
so Sharon just got approved. My wife got approved for a franchise. So not only did we get a Kumon franchise because we started this conversation, but I'm going to get the $1 million. And it's really hard to sell stock that's private, guys. Okay. I know I'm getting a discount. So a lot of people say, hey, why are you selling this? Because you know why? Because think about it. Let's say I'm a billionaire in the future, which I will be, because I'm going to work really hard and I think I'm talented enough, or at least I'll be a multimillionaire, right? What would you do if you had the ability to send money into the past? Would you give yourself $1 million at the cost of 10 million today? Let's say you're like, oh no, let's say I'm like, right now I'm 46. Mm-hmm. Let's say I cash out in 5-10 years. My mom may have passed away, right? But she's in, and she actually, you know, mm-hmm. she just had some breast cancer and she got one of her breasts removed and she actually's doing really well and she's very healthy.
Recently?
And she's doing the anti-aging stuff I'm using and she actually got even healthier, right? So she actually got gray hair, but now it's actually black again, right? And so she's going to live a lot longer. And then my brothers, you know, I want to take care of them too, right? And you know, I can give them a little bit of that. And then I can also pay off my house completely.
That's awesome.
And then I thought about my happiness. It's like, you know, my happiness would be like worth more than $1 million. It would be worth infinite. Because that would be the completion of the American dream.
Yeah. Yeah, it's full circle right here. And then everybody...
So last year, I thought the completion was that first million, but I realized that it was enough to get halfway there. And I was like, let's just go for the whole thing. And even though in the future, I might lose 100 million because that million might go 100x, which it will.
Yeah.
That 100 million when I'm 50 or 60 is not going to buy the happiness for my kids going on vacation today.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, yeah. It's about
it's not going to buy my peace of mind that like no matter what happens, the house, it's worth probably $1 million, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Once I pay off the mortgage, which is like, I think 400,000, 500,000, 600,000, I don't know, 500,000, some give or take, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll still have kept, you know, some money left for the Kumon, which is probably like 100K. And then I'm also going to, like I said, put some money into the Mass Realty thing. That's like 10K. Like I said, Roberto, right?
Because
I want you guys, I want that to be a small business that we earn slowly, right? And then the Kumon, between the Kumon and basically owning the house and my wife working, I can become a housewife, which is always my dream come true.
Yeah, yeah, become that trophy husband, man. Like it's
I
want to
be the trophy
that.
Husband. I was like, I bought the house. We got for a couple hundred K, right? And I have more stock coming. So it's not like I don't own stock. I still have stock.
Mm-hmm.
So to give you an example, like I own 50% of the shares at the beginning.
Okay.
Okay. Of the 50% I own at the beginning, I still have about 20% left.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Obviously, after dilution and everything, so I basically sold 60% of what I owned.
Okay.
Right, 67. So I still have 30% of what I owned before. So I sold $2 out of $3. I still have $1 out of $3 left.
Okay.
That's good enough for me. Right? Because let's say that $1 out of $3 goes 100x.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's hundreds of millions of dollars, right? I'll be fine.
And you know, there's an important factor here. Like I was talking with a couple of friends that came up with the same idea of like they were always stressed, always busy, always at work, always doing like the other stuff, concentrating on like not even being with their families, just like this like concept of infinite growth. And at some point they were like so stressed and everything that they started talking to me about the fact, you know what, somebody came up to me and they said, like, figure out your number. Like, what's the number of money, like the amount of money that you need per month to be fine, to be happy, to be able to pay all your stuff, to be able to like be home at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, if you, like, no overtime, and to be like just a happy person. And
yeah, so this is actually, yes, guys, this is the first time Roberto found out about this.
Mm.
His real reaction. So for me, I had no idea this was going to happen. I thought I was just going to borrow money so my wife can do the Kumon.
Yeah.
And then I thought about it. I was like, hey, let's see if this. I didn't even have to ask. They asked me. Now, the reason they asked me is because the company doubled in revenue.
Okay.
And they saw that I was selling it for a huge discount to this guy. He's like, holy crap, I want that too.
Like, I want in.
I want to buy that because that's worth a lot. And I'm like, okay, that's worth a lot to you. That's great. I don't mind getting 30 cents on the dollar, because that 30 cents for me is paying off my house. So going back to what would make you happy, right? For
like
me,
at this point,
I came from playing with marbles and making poop out of clay, right? my penis out of clay. Like, that's my toys back then. So I don't have any hobbies. My only hobby is watching TV maybe once in a while, like Star Trek, TV shows I like, walking. I don't even have a gym membership. I have this membership to like this intramural sports thing where you can do pickup games, volleyball. I play tennis with my friend, you know, mostly for free, you know, outside. And sometimes during the winter, we do like an indoor thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And literally, I cook. I'm a really great cook. Once I own this house, the only expense are taxes, the car, and food. And my kids obviously will have to go to college. But they're going to public schools right now. Like, as long as I tutor them and they go to public school, and there's actually a really good school system here in Boston where if you can test, you get to these magnet schools. So the top three schools are really good in terms of these test schools that you have to test into. And like, my kids definitely will test into it.
Yeah.
And once they test into it, it's actually really quite good. And then you go to a college here. You know, I may not have the money for college yet, but I'll make it during the next 4 years because my daughter's only 14. I have 4 more years to make
it. Exactly. You have
time. During those 4 years, my old company might go public. And there'll be another event where I can cash out. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing. I mean, like, seriously, like, money right now will get you, like, a long way, and will buy, like, that peace of mind. And knowing that you're backed by something is just, like, a great feeling.
You know what I think is the secret for me?
What is it?
Okay. The secret for me is no debt.
Yes.
I think debt is actually a burden that a lot of people have.
It's really crippling.
If you pay off all your credit cards,
mm-hmm.
you own the house you live in. If you do those two things and you have no debt, right, and you basically just work a regular job, you're going to have an amazing life in America, right? Anywhere. You own a house, you have no debt, you have to pay for food, pay for entertainment, and you don't even have to have a car. You can have an Uber. Right, you can have an Uber these days for the special occasions. You can take the transit system. You can have
a
T-card.
A great public system. Yes.
You can ride the bike or ride the scooter. I ride my scooter everywhere. I do not take the transit system. The transit system is slow compared to my scooter. My scooter, I have more fun. I do squats on my scooter.
Yeah.
So when I do my scooter, it's like my exercise program, and I have fresh air, and I save the environment. And the scooter is free. I don't have to pay for gas. I just plug it in. The electricity is nominal, right? And I plug it in at my work, so I get the free electricity from work. I'm one of those people who like optimizes my day to get free electricity from work, because we already pay for it during rent, you know, for rent and all that. So
like, I go to the bathroom at work.
Yeah, I'm so cheap that I would actually like plug in my phone at work so I could charge there, and then at home I don't have to charge it.
That's how maximizing resources.
Well, I'm saying I'm paying rent here, you know, whatever, $10,000 a month.
Exactly.
And it includes, you know, all these utilities. It says, I was thinking, hey, maybe I should put a plant system once we get funding.
Mm-hmm.
And the plant system will have an herb garden for me, like a hydro, based on fish.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but they have these ones that the fish live in it, right? And the fish poop and they feed the plants. and that's how, and it's all symbiotic system, right? Huh. So you don't even have to do like you don't have to even do fertilizer.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know they had that. I've never really been into like
fish. Yeah. Oh, they have the systems where they you can just load the cartridges and it'll just feed the nutrients on demand. So I was thinking of buying that for the office. But anyway, look, here's the deal. The key to happiness is
no debt.
You have to realize where you came from.
Yes.
And then appreciate the stuff in front of you. So even before this second $1 million, I was really happy. Even before the first $1 million, when I was broke, I was really happy. Because I realized that I was never going to starve to death. That my kids would have at least some school. That I would not be homeless. I can probably get a job in America. Mm-hmm. And those three things were not certain in Vietnam. Right?
No, not at all.
I mean, anywhere, except for America.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I get questioned a lot of, like, here in Ecuador, why did I come here? I'm like, wait, what's wrong? Why didn't you go like to the States and everything? Or like, because like, or you stay in Canada. And it's just like choices. And like you said, I mean, like, it's all about knowing your own capabilities and what you can do and you can't do, and getting to know yourself and what you're ready to offer to the market as well.
Yeah. So do you own your home, Roberto, or do you have any mortgage on it?
Yeah, no, I don't have a mortgage, but my house was like a heritage. Like, I inherited it.
Yeah. So you inherited from your family, right?
Yeah.
And so you don't have that many costs. So you live in your ancestral home, right?
Yeah.
You have a lot of debt?
Not that much, actually. Like, it's not even like five figures. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. See, but I'm saying, like if you have no debt and you live in a home and you make what, 50K, 40K, something or something, wherever in your area you live, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the time, the cost of food is about 10% of your salary. And let's say you go to restaurants and stuff, it's probably 30% of your salary.
And here in Ecuador, things are cheap, man. Like, we produce everything. So, like, a buck can get you, like, three avocados or, like, two. What is it? Like, another dollar will get you, like, a full kind of, like, of bananas. The vegetables and fruit are super cheap.
Yeah, and I think that's what you need to basically think about. Like, so would you rather do that where you live in the middle of nowhere, like let's say Vietnam, right? Like, own a house, buy a house, right? And then live like a regular person and not have to stress out at all and like enjoy your life. I think you have that option, but a lot of people don't take that option.
No.
Like, people can move to Mexico, they can move somewhere else, like, and do that. But that's the reason, because they have a community, right? They can't give up their life. They actually like the movie they're in.
Yeah.
The movie that they're in, they're used to, right? You might be in the movie like The Office, yes, right? And Office.
It's about that. What you just said right now.
Lots of friends.
Yeah. What you just said right now about being used to. Yeah. You're just used to it. You're there. Like, it is what it is. Like, you don't really think about what you're doing. And it just go through the motions. Because that's what your parents did. So that's what you're going to do. And that's what your kids are going to do probably.
Yeah. So like, the reason you watch this podcast is you get to see firsthand the results of actually not making that choice and doing the road less taken, right? Where you go and you say, okay, maybe I go and I escape Vietnam on a freaking boat with my young children. We might die.
Yeah. No,
and then when I look back at them, I say, wow, they escaped Vietnam. They didn't have any money. They didn't have any language skills. They had to learn. They had to go to community college. My parents had to go to community college, Bunker Hill Community College. They became electronic technicians, meaning they soldered stuff together. Yeah. But they were the best because they were actually smart and intelligent. They basically, it's like you're hiring the principal of a school to basically do like menial labor, but it's actually like electronics.
Severely overqualified.
Overqualified. That's the thing. They were the best.
It speaks a lot about the situation in Vietnam. Where like people like your parents were like, you know what, this offer over here is way better than what I have right now in Vietnam. So, and even if it doesn't sound appealing at all to like try to escape on a boat, hope for the best over there. Like, I don't speak language. It doesn't matter. It's still better than what is being offered in this place. And to actually have that like courage and like that to make that assessment and be like, you know what, this is it. Like, I can't leave my kids here.
Yes. And the thing is, think about what America is getting in that situation. Mm-hmm. They're getting the people who are educated enough, sly enough, smart enough, whatever you want to call it, to pull off a plan like that, right? To buy a ticket from the right person, or maybe organize their own trip, right? And go across the ocean, you know, apply the right forms, go through the process, come to America, put themselves through school with assistance from America. Obviously, America is actually very quite great. Navigate the social system, have their kids grow up, and then one of the kids gets accepted to, you know, an elite school like Harvard, like I did. And then, you know, I go and I stay in the country and I make many jobs, create many companies, invent things. Not just me, but the people who I hire, who are also immigrants, some of them, right?
Yeah.
And we basically make America great. But because America took a chance on the people who were the entrepreneurs.
Exactly. Like 35 years ago.
To do that trip.
Yeah.
So I think I have to give props to people who, you had to hire that donkey to take you to, you know, whatever part of Peru, and that part of Peru will take you to South America, and then South America to Mexico. From Mexico, you got to escape the border. That's a lot of freaking work. They really want to be here.
It shows you like that little, like that butterfly effect of, you didn't know that when you were getting onto that boat, when you were a kid, that all of a sudden you're going to be helping, I don't know, like the, like P-Money or Varada or anybody else on the team, or like Midnight. Who knew? You were just on the boat, and like, let's hope for the best, huh? And now like 30 years later, this is it.
Yeah, but let me tell you the converse of that too.
Mm-hmm.
I can say this too. So I love America. I love that. But immigration, there are also some bad guys who make it through.
Oh, yeah,
so there are people who make up their information. For example, like, you know, the Nazis escaped Germany, and they went to Argentina.
Argentina's fine, yes.
Right, and they went to Argentina, and they basically, you know, lied about where they made their money and all that stuff, and their wealth and all that stuff. So there's a lot of immigrants, you know, who are trying to come to America to hide their money from China,
mm-hmm.
from India, from Vietnam,
okay.
from Thailand, who are wealthy people, who might be gangsters, who might be thugs and bad guys, or people who swindled money out of someone, and criminals, and they also have the skills to legitimately go through the system. So in Canada, what you can do is, if you put $3 million into any business, you can buy your way into the country and get a green card there.
$3 million?
All you have to do is take $3 million, open a location in Canada, and do something. Anything.
That's crazy.
And they'll let you in the country.
Yeah, and if you go through Quebec, it's not even that complicated. Just all you have to do is learn French, and it's simplified.
So Canada is losing. Not many people are born in Canada. Like the demographics of all the Western countries suck.
Yeah.
So someone you should listen to is Peter Zeihan, right? Peter Zeihan, right? Zeihan, Peter Zeihan, right? He's actually great at analyzing at high level what's going on in the world, right? But what's going on is the population is shrinking in many countries. Some countries are doing better than others. But immigration is one of those things that can offset the loss of people. And you want to have the best people come to America. But at the same time, there are people who are bad guys who make it to America through the legal system. And those people, you got to make sure you block. Okay, there's some spies. There's some people who pretend they're immigrants because they escaped this, whatever. They're not. They're spies. Some of them work for companies, and they'll send that data back to China or to Russia or to whatever, right? So there has to be a legitimate system where legitimate people can make it through, but also you have to not be dumb.
And okay, Russia,
a lot of immigrants, were really sly.
Yeah, and China plays a long game. So like they will like wait. If it takes 10 years, it'll take 10 years. It takes 15 years, it is what it is. Like I feel like China is one of those countries that understand longevity and the big picture.
Yeah, but it's not even that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a culture that doesn't have basically the history.
Okay.
Right? If you think about communism,
mm-hmm.
everything about communism is like whatever the rules were doesn't apply to us. So if you look at the communist country, if you look at Marxism,
mm-hmm.
it's basically saying, well, the whole plan is get along with the elites, and at some point there'll be a revolution, we'll kill all of them, and we'll take over. And then after that, there'll be harmony, and peace because we're in charge.
Until somebody does that to us.
No, well, what happens then, you have a committee. The committee is a bunch of people who run the government. They quote, they are the government.
Yeah.
But if you look at the pictures of the committee for China, it's the same people for the last 60 years. So what do you call that? Like, I call that a kingdom. Yeah. I call that a kingdom with many kings agreeing to work with each other. Or I would even call that the mob. I would call that the mob, where all these mobsters have their territory and have these things. And there's a big mob boss. His name is Xi Jinping.
Yes.
And he is a badass mob boss who no one wants to mess with, because if you mess with him, you know what happens. You get purged legally, or you get killed. You or somehow family. Something happens to one of your family members or something, that they squeeze you just like the mob would.
It's crazy.
That's though, a country you're living in, you know, when you live in those authoritarian countries.
And that you're stuck.
Yeah, but Al Pacino is not a bad looking guy. He seems like a cool guy, and you know, in the movies, and he looks like you could probably have a beer with him and get along with him. He's the average guy. He might even be generous and donate to your church. He maybe even do you a favor today. And maybe tomorrow he'll ask for a favor back.
Yeah. Which is, man, like, you don't know what he's going to ask back for.
Well, that's the whole structure of the mafia. Mm-hmm. So imagine the mafia took over your country. And that is, I would say, about one third of the countries in the world.
Yeah. Well, just here, I remember, like, probably like a year ago, they killed one of like the important like drug dealers here at the Manabí at the coast cities, and they're like, but that guy was so nice. He was like in charge of all like a bunch of mobs, but he was so nice because you could actually talk to him before he started killing your family. They're like, huh?
They have to be very charismatic, to run an organization like that. They're ruthless. And I understand how that works, because I came from the hood, man. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the hood where my friends, they would have parents who were on welfare.
Okay.
And their parents were Vietnamese, would divorce, so that legally it would be a single mom situation. The single mom situation would allow her to have Section A. Section A is free housing.
Shit.
And then get benefits like food and all that stuff while the husband still lives there too.
Well, that's the shit, though. I mean, like, that's part of the problem I see when, like, sometimes you get, like, all these xenophobia and oh, we hate the immigrants, and because there's always somebody that screws the system.
Well, that they're just using the system to, because they don't know how, like, think about that person's point of view. They don't speak the language. Mm-hmm. They look for a job for, like, a year. They can't get it. They know that this is easy to do. If they do this, their family's safe. Is this your country? No. You just came into Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You won the ticket from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You came to the factory the first time. This is not even your factory. You're just going to go eat the chocolate you want. Now, there's some rules. Mm-hmm. Some people will obey the rules. Some people won't. But this is not your factory. It's not your home yet. So maybe you don't feel so much loyalty, right? And because of that, your kids look at that and they say, Mom and Dad, I'm going to go hang out. And the mom and dad says, you can't hang out. You have to do your homework. He's like, screw you. I'm going to go hang out. And the mom's like, you stay here. And then the son's like, nope. If I don't get my way, I'm going to call the cops on you and tell them that you're cheating on welfare. Literally. I mean, that's literally what happened. Like, that is a true story. So that you get what you pay. You get the karmic justice is you set an example for your kids.
That sucks. I remember it's funny now because it's over, but I had one of my uncles he used to be like, all Latinos, like most Latinos beat their kids. Like, that's education. It is what it is. You know, like, we all got spanked. We all got like hit with a belt or something at some point. And my cousin was telling me, and he's like, one day my dad, he was like, I'm going to beat your ass right now. And I knew I was in Canada. He lived in Ottawa back in the days. And he was like, I picked up the phone and I'm like, I'm going to call who's the child protective services. And my uncle just answered, and call an ambulance while you're at it, because they're going to take at least 10 minutes to get here. And then, like, he just put down the phone and that was it. But it was like this weird situation where you have like the kids threatening their parents with like these legal system services that some of like the older generations just didn't grow up with in their own country. So like, okay, also this is what you want to, this is how you want to play this. It comes to like this weird situation.
Yeah, I mean, look, people are people,
yeah,
regardless if they're Vietnamese or not. But I got my ass kicked too in terms of like, okay, so corporal punishment in our generation was normal. So in Vietnam, we have something called roi. Okay. And roi means to eat the stick. Roi is the stick. So roi is the stick they beat you with. Your parents beat you with roi, and roi, okay? So in Vietnam, they had the stick to beat you with, and they would hang it up on the wall or somewhere in the house. Like, you want to eat some of that?
And sometimes
want to eat some of that?
And they will tell you, like, go get my belt. You know, like, man, and you know,
that's the same thing.
Shit.
It was okay. And then in America, I remember that we did some bad things.
Okay.
And so one of the things that my parents did was, he's like, okay, go to the backyard, find the stick you want me to beat you with, and come back.
Emotional
That was one of the
damage right
psychological
there.
Tricks. And then I would have to hold the stick on my knees. And they say, wait there, I'll come back and beat your ass.
That's
I
crazy.
would be like crying like crazy with my brothers, right? And
Yeah.
then we fall asleep, and that was their punishment, is to basically inflict so much psychological pain, but
Psychological
also going on
damage,
your knees and like, you know, holding the stick like that, it's hard. It hurts.
yeah. Man, fun times, man. Back in the days, now you can't do any of that. Education has
And
changed.
then you know, one day they were gonna beat us, and we were so funny. We took a magazine book and put it in our butts, and then my mom pretended to hit us, and she knew, she was laughing. She thought that was clever.
Well, man, you're
But we
about
were
to get
bad
beat.
boys.
Yeah. No, like the things that my like what my daughter does now is nothing compared to what we used to do before.
So I think that's the best thing that, you know, this million is going to bring, right? So I'm going to help my brothers, you know, and they don't
Yeah.
have to worry about it. So the first million, you know, I can barely, you know, get my act together. This next one, it's basically going to give me the financial security for the rest of my life, right?
Yeah, you're gonna be stable with
You know,
that,
my
yeah.
brother lives with me in this house already. So him and his wife live here. It's actually a pretty big house, you know, it's three floors. But this is our ancestral home, right? So we own the ancestral home now, like just like you do, right?
Yeah,
Like
it's
we
fun.
are the first family to own this home and buy the home. And from now on, our ancestors, you know, kids can benefit from that. So I don't have to worry about my kids anymore. Even if they don't go to college, we can have like a Shameless. You know the TV show Shameless?
I've seen him. I've seen the
Yeah, so
ad, but I haven't
Shameless, like, is
watched
a
it.
bunch of a bunch of basically poor people who live in the same home, and they all like are the same family members, and you just have to keep coming back to the home because they can't get their act together when they move out, so they end up living at the same house. But yeah, it's Shameless because they're shameless. You know, they're like, you know, poor. Basically, it's a TV show about poor white trash. I'm not sure if I can say
Yeah,
that, you know, but
that
basically
is
that's
it.
what they are. I think it is. I think they didn't even advertise that, right? Although some of them have their act together, right? But yeah, I mean, look, this is surprising. But it's also Year of the Rabbit. So my son was born Year of the Rabbit, Year of the Cat. And I have to tell you the story. I want to brag about it. So the way he was
Right.
conceived was, I had a lottery ticket. My wife said that she'll give me one night where I can get her pregnant because I wanted to have a dragon baby. So a
Okay.
dragon baby is, you know, like 2012 would be the dragon baby, but I wanted a baby before the dragon baby. So I basically had my son Tyson in 2011. And I had a lottery ticket where I had one night to get her pregnant, and I got her pregnant in one night.
That's a
I
weird
know that
deal, right?
night we were on a cruise. The boat was, I think it was called, Something of the Seas, Oasis of the Seas, or something, or one of those cruise boats. And it was one of those nights. She's like, here's your chance. And I won the lottery
Let's do this.
in the Year of the Rabbit, basically. So he
Exactly.
was born in
Hi,
Year of the Rabbit. And
Tyson.
then the
So this
next
is
year
how
is
you
Year of
were
the
made.
Dragon. So next year in 2024 is my year. I was born in Year of the Dragon. And my daughter, Emily, was born in the Year of the Dragon. So my daughter came. My wife was pregnant with my son. Delivered him in
Okay.
March 2020, 2011, right?
Okay.
And then
What
she was
day?
pregnant with my daughter 5 months later. And my daughter and my son are 14 months apart.
What days was your son born on March?
March 9th.
Oh, that's crazy.
And she's May 18th.
I'm March 2nd.
So if you think about it, 9 times 2 is 18.
Yeah.
She's the second child, like in a row. So I hit a double lottery. So I won him on the cruise ship, and then I got her as a bonus. Now think about what happened just now. I just got $1 million last year,
mm-hmm.
around this time, around
February,
March.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year later, I get a second $1 million. Okay. And here's what's strange. Okay. It's February 2nd, 2-2. So the second million, I just made $2 million on my last company. And remember how I have the scar on my chest right here?
Yep.
From spilling that coffee?
Comma, I think. Yep.
It has two commas. Or maybe it's meant to be $2 million.
What does it
how
mean?
How about that? Anyway, that's very mysterious, guys. I'm very happy. So that's basically my report, Roberto. You get to hear it firsthand along with Roberto. I'm very happy. Now I can focus on my company, Fook Labs. And then Fook Labs, we're doing really well, actually. Just to give you an update on how that's doing,
mm-hmm.
We're still waiting on that investor who verbally said yes last week to give us a term sheet. We don't know if it's going to happen or not. I have no idea.
Well,
but now with this money, at least personally, my family will be, I'll be less worried, right? And my wife can do the Kumon, and then we'll be all set, right? And if I have to, you know, I can help the company further, right, to get to this part. But the good news is, regardless of what happens to the investor, the client that we had, the client where we did some work for them, where we made $500,000 for this client, they're really happy with the work. We had finished that project with them in December, and they're going to renew the contract probably in 2-3 months. And the contract will be probably like 3 times more.
Bigger?
Maybe more.
That's awesome.
And it may be enough to make the company profitable.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. So good things are coming to those who wait. I think, you know, I'm going to peak late in my career. I'm starting to come out of my mature as a CEO, as a leader, as an entrepreneur. And I hope that you guys follow this journey. It's been crazy. So when you first started this journey, you saw me go from broke literally to $1 million. And now you see me getting the second million, and then this will take care of me for the rest of my life. And now I can really go after the big win. We also have an amazing team that I built. Now I'm really happy with the company. I'm actually, everything is going perfect. And, you know, this podcast, hopefully we can continue if the funding continues. If the funding doesn't get approved, I'm going to have to shut the show down. So that's my threat to the universe. Whoever that one fan is, please pray that we get this funding.
We got you.
Otherwise, I'm going to have to cancel this show. For real.
What?
I'm just going to retire. Why would I have the show? Like, look, we failed.
For fun. For fun.
Look, it's a show about startups. If you start a company and it fails, then it's no longer a show. Then you just talk about yourself, right?
Yeah. Well, there is some knowledge to be spread around here.
But look, fate will determine it. Like, I'm going to try my best. Even if this investor says no, we have another investor. Okay, let me give you an update. Okay, so I do have an update.
Oh.
So we had three investors. One of them said no already. I talked about that.
Yeah.
The second one said yes. So the number one draft pick had said yes verbally. And the number two draft pick, this venture capital company, I can even say their name, right? Mass Ventures, right?
Okay.
They are going to review us on February 13th, they said.
Okay.
On February 13th, we'll get a decision of whether they want to continue and do what's called due diligence, basically do the final assessment. And then on March 20th, they'll do a vote. Now, that's a very set time frame because it's part of the state and they have a process.
Yeah.
So even if this investor says no, we have that.
We'll have to meet their deadlines.
We also have some other investors now. Now that we have this renewal of the contract, it's going to even help us further. So if we have to, we can go after a backup plan. But I have high hopes that the show continues. I will know next week, hopefully, about the investor, and I'll give you some updates. But this week, this is the update, $2 million.
We'll be right here. See you guys next time. Take care.